You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to the Best Practices Show, where I'm your host, Kirk Barrett, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over. And if you've been a regular listener of our podcast, you're going to see this is one of my favorite people in all of dentistry. Not only is he funny, he's smart, he's intelligent, and he's kind of in a category by himself when it comes to, you know, what's going on in the world of, you know, pharmacy and all those things that are controversial in that area in dentistry. And he also makes a subject that's pretty dry for most of us. You're going to see, I'm going to have Tom Viola on today, and we're going to be talking about bugs and drugs, the ongoing controversy surrounding prophylaxis. So you don't want to miss this. Now, before we get started, a couple things. I always want to welcome our new listeners to the podcast. So thank you guys for listening. There are quite a few of you now from all over, and some of you joined through the COVID conference. If you're listening today, I always remind you, just do us a favor, go down to that subscribe button, hit the subscribe button, because I want you to keep showing up with us. Because you're going to see every single week, we're going to bring you a brand new expert that is going to bring you some great information, because I'm not the smartest guy. That's why I surround myself with smart people. And they're going to give you great information so you can create a better practice and a better life. And I don't want you to miss out on it. So make sure you keep showing up at our ACT Dental event. And if we're out on the road, come by and say hi. I know you're going to see Viola. Hey, another thing too, if you have a study club and you're looking for a great speaker and you haven't had my guest on there in your program, you're missing out. This guy's amazing. So Viola, I've had you many times. Now, I always like to start here because we produce a lot of podcasts, and sometimes people don't know who the heck you are. I still talk to people all the time. I'm like, you got to have Viola. And they're like, who is that? I'm like, what are you talking about? So just give us a sliver before we get into this very controversial subject. Who is Tom Viola? What do you do?
Who is this guy, Viola? That's what I want to know. He's on the wall behind me. I can see that much for sure. So my name is Tom Viola, and Kirk, thank you for having had me so many times on this podcast, and many more to come, I hope. I am what many people call Mr. Pharmacology for some reason. I don't know. I'm like, can you come up with a better title than Mr. Pharmacology? How about Mr. Big Biceps?
But right.
I guess you need to have big biceps to be called Mr. Big Biceps. Maybe that's why. But anyway, the point is, people come to know me as the pharmacology expert in dentistry lately because so many things have been changing in pharmacology over the last couple of years, especially, that even I have trouble keeping up. And so it's difficult for me. I do it full time. Imagine what it must be like for the average dental professional who has to retain all of their other knowledge about dentistry and then know pharmacology well enough to be able to use it every day in practice.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, and today we're going to be talking about a very controversial issue. Now, I know we're going to hit some hot buttons here. So let's talk about the why before we get into the how. Like, why is this so controversial?
Well, it boils down to two main points. And the first one is, number one, is antibiotic prophylaxis even necessary? Okay, well, if I have to ask that question, I have to ask a preview question to that. What the heck is prophylaxis and why is it necessary? We know that there are certain vectors under which bacteria that normally reside in the mouth can end up causing trouble in other parts of the body, right? So obviously one of the issues is infective endocarditis. So that is where, again, bacteria from the mouth have found their way into the endocardium and may cause issues that can ultimately lead to bad outcomes for our patients. But also the bacteria in the mouth can find their way to where we've had replacement joints placed, so knee replacements, hip replacements, and so on. And that can lead to that joint replacement failure. So these are pretty significant events in people's lives. And certainly we want to try everything we can in dentistry to avoid that from happening. So one of the ways we avoid bacteria that normally reside in the mouth to find other places or other ways into the body cavities is to prophylax with antibiotics, to kill them before they have a chance to establish residence elsewhere. But it's controversial because everybody knows that when you overuse an antibiotic, it increases the risk of infection. And there is that whole aspect of antibiotic stewardship, which is we should be the stewards. We should be the lookouts for making sure that antibiotics are used both effectively and efficiently, but also appropriately. So we're not overusing them and therefore causing resistance to occur.
Yeah. Amen, brother. So let's get into it. When you talk about the most frequently prescribed antibiotics, give us the essential info.
Yep. So I can run down the list pretty easy of antibiotics that we normally use in dentistry. And that's the problem. And that in and of itself is that we have a great arsenal of antibiotics that we use in dentistry, but unfortunately, it's a very small arsenal. And they're not really all antibiotics. We use the term colloquially, but really they're antibacterials, you know. Okay, so what are the ones we use mostly? Well, I think anyone would agree that the penicillins are our favorite antibacterials, okay? That would include penicillin VK and amoxicillin, specifically in dentistry. And I'd be hard-pressed to find a general dentist or and any dental specialist as well that hasn't prescribed amoxicillin at some point in their practice. And the reason for that is because it works, because it has great efficacy and great coverage against the bugs we find in the mouth. Now, the penicillins are bactericidal, which means that they destroy the cell wall and therefore they kill the bacteria, which would sound great if you're treating a virulent bacteria that you want to get rid of. But remember, they don't just kill the bad guys, they also kill the good guys. And that can lead to problems with things like opportunistic infection, and even the potential, anyway, for increasing the risk of bleeding in patients who are using drugs like Coumadin. So they're great drugs, but they do have their adverse effects. The good part about amoxicillin, though, is that it has very few adverse effects other than what I just described. So you can, gosh, you could take penicillin and or amoxicillin in really high doses and really not have a tremendous negative effect. The bad side or the dark side to penicillins is that they're derived from a mold, penicillin natata mold, which means that you could be allergic, and anaphylaxis is always a very real threat with the penicillins. Yeah. The next drug we almost always use in dentistry for patients who are penicillin allergic has been traditionally clindamycin. Now, clindamycin can be bacteriostatic or cidal, depending on the dose. Typically, we look at it as bacteriostatic. But the problem with clindamycin, and to be fair, Kirk, because I know you may get people responding to this, and I want to make sure I say this up front. Any antibacterial that we use in dentistry can cause pseudomembranous colitis, which is the way we describe C. diff-related, you know, diarrhea and so on. But clindamycin seems to cause it more. So there's a higher frequency or a higher incidence of C. diff-related complications in patients who take clindamycin versus all the other antibiotics we use in dentistry. Okay. So what does that mean? It means that if you take clindamycin as we normally prescribe it, depending on how many days you take it, you could foster the growth of C. diff in your gut. And that could lead to, as I said, pseudomembranous colitis or breakdown of the membranous lining in the colon. And that can be bad things overall, not to mention the fact that you've got profuse watery diarrhea, which has a very characteristic odor. So nobody wants C. diff-related diarrhea. And if you have it, everybody around you knows it. So my advice is to be kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek here. When you've got C. diff-related diarrhea, there's only two kinds, and neither of them are good. One of them I like to call the slow leak of death. You might think you're tight. You ain't tight enough, okay? And the other one is explosive diarrhea. So if you have explosive diarrhea, do me and everybody else that knows you a favor and stay home and lock the doors and maybe suggest your family relocate for a while, because nobody wants to be around you, let alone in the same house, if you have that type of diarrhea. But, okay, back to the serious comments here. Clindamycin has been our mainstay. We've been using clindamycin as an alternative to penicillins for years. So what would we use instead? What other agents are there? Well, recently, the American Heart Association revised its guidelines for infective endocarditis prophylaxis and introduced the idea that perhaps in patients who are not allergic to penicillin, we should use not so much clindamycin, but cefalexin. Cefalexin is Keflex. You may have taken it if you've had a sinus infection or maybe infections like that. It's a cephalosporin. Okay, so why is that problematic if you're penicillin allergic? Because even though it's a small percent cross-sensitivity, there's a chance that if you're allergic to penicillin or sensitive to penicillin, you might be allergic to the cephalosporins. Okay, so let's say you're not allergic. Well, cefalexin would be a pretty good choice in place of clindamycin. But most dental professionals would say, well, I would just use amoxicillin anyway. Okay, but what if you are allergic to penicillin and you don't want to use clindamycin? What are your options? Okay, well, we can maybe rule out cefalexin, although some clinicians take the chance anyway, even if it is less than 10% cross-sensitivity. The American Heart Association guidelines came out and said we could use things like azithromycin and even doxycycline. Now, Ken, I'm going to tell you, I'm sure you know someone who's taken azithromycin. If you know anybody who's ever taken a Z-Pak for a sinus infection, right, you know that people have been using azithromycin for a while. It may make you scratch your head as like, why don't we just use azithromycin all the time? Why do we even fool around with the penicillins and the clindamycins when azithromycin seems to be pretty well tolerated by everybody? We should just use azithromycin for everyone. The answer is that azithromycin can cause adverse effects. Like what? Well, for one, we know that at least in some cases, it can lead to ventricular arrhythmia. Now, that's not been proven necessarily, but there's enough evidence to suggest that azithromycin can lead to arrhythmias, you know, prolongation of the QT interval. And in the world of dentistry, we use lidocaine, we use anesthetic agents that can have that same effect. So it may not be the best choice in dentistry. What else? Well, azithromycin is also famous for causing drug interactions. So may not be, again, the best choice for us. All right, well then what's left? Doxycycline. Great drug. We use it in dentistry all the time, topically, like in Restin, Atradox and minocycline and Restin to treat periodontal disease in the pocket, but not necessarily systemically. Although Periostat was a doxycycline capsule you could swallow that worked to reduce collagenase activity and treated perio. All right. That's it then, right? There's nothing else. Well, there's one more drug. And this drug bears mention, metronidazole. Now, we don't really use Flagyl or metronidazole in dentistry as monotherapy. That's because it has great coverage against those wascally gram-negative anaerobes that plague us sometimes with deep-seated infection. So that's great. It has coverage against the gram-negatives, but it doesn't do a darn thing for, you know, a lot of the other bugs that we find in the mouth. So metronidazole is best prescribed in combination with amoxicillin, let's say. So amoxicillin plus metronidazole. That way you get all the coverage of the amoxicillin plus extra coverage of the gram-negative anaerobes with metronidazole when they're prescribed together. That works wonderful, but that's it. That's your whole arsenal. And so that's where I think, Kirk, we have to come back and talk about what? What about resistance? What about if we overutilize the antibiotics that we have in dentistry to the point where, okay, now the bugs have become resistant? What do we do then? Our arsenal is too small to take that chance.
Yeah. So a couple questions, you know, again, controversial stuff. What's your take on joint replacement? you know, because that's a hot topic.
Yeah. So this is a controversy that rages, Kirk, in dentistry all the time. And it's almost like lines have been drawn in the sand and people refuse to cross them. With good reason, by the way. I can't blame anybody in this situation because I get the frustration. If you took a look at the AAOS, the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, okay, as well as the ADA, the American Dental Association's guidelines. And everybody knows I love the ADA because they're the leaders in our profession. And AGD does a good job too. They're out there, you know, pushing for good outcomes for our patients too. All of our organizations in dentistry and the Association of Orthopedic Surgeons themselves all say what? Let me sum it up in my best Brooklyn accent. Don't do it. Why are we prophylaxing for joint replacement infection when almost every bit of evidence we have suggests it doesn't work, that we should not be prophylaxing for joint replacement infection, except for the cases where the patient is really immunocompromised and you know, it can do, you know, wonders for maybe that patient because of their status. But otherwise, for the average patient that we see in dentistry who's had a joint replacement, prophylaxis is unnecessary. There's no proof that it works, and all it's doing is increasing the chance for resistance against the commonly used antibiotics in dentistry, right? Okay. That's our perspective. But as a pharmacist, I have the luxury and the privilege of being able to speak to more than just dental groups. And so I've spoken to some medical doctors and their groups and even orthopedic surgeons, and I've gotten their take on it. And their take is what? Who the heck wants to get a second knee replacement on the same knee? Who the heck wants to get another hip replacement on the same hip? Nobody wants that. So if there's a chance, even this much, the most remote chance that infection could cause joint replacement failure and lead to very poor outcomes for our patient if that joint has to be replaced yet again, why would we take that chance? Just give them the amoxicillin and we're done. No risk or very little risk. And one orthopedic doctor came to me and said, okay, well, let's put it this way. Knee replacement done a second time, you know, each time it's done, $75,000 to $100,000 for a knee replacement. Amoxicillin costs $4. Seriously? Why are we even having this discussion? And I get that. I think, though, however, stewardship is important for us because, again, we have a very small arsenal, and if resistance develops, we're basically out of luck. Plus, it's not all economics, as we know and understand. But I think the biggest thing in our craw, Kirk, is the fact that orthopedic doctors expect the dentist or the oral surgeon or, you know, the dental professional to write the script for the amoxicillin, to provide the amoxicillin, when in theory, in the dentist's or the oral surgeon's mind, the dental professional's mind, you're not doing the one prescribing. You're not the one that insists on the prophylaxis. Why should you be the one to write the script? But moreover, if you took a look at the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons' own website, it says there that if, and even the ADA reinforces this, if the orthopedic surgeon insists against, you know, your advice that prophylaxis is required, then it should be the orthopedic surgeon that writes the script. And yet that never happens. Why? Because it's guidelines. It's not law. It's not rules. It's guidelines. Okay. Here's my take on it, Kirk, for everybody else, okay? As the pharmacist, I can tell you this. If you stand your ground as the dental professional and say, I'm not doing it. It's not required. It's never been proven to do anything. I'm not going to do it. And the orthopedic surgeon says, yeah, you're right. Forget about it. I don't think we should use prophylaxis. Trust me, your patient will find a way to get that antibiotic. Why? Because they don't want to go through another replacement surgery either. So they'll get their general practitioner to write it. Heck, I've had people take the pills out of the kid's bottle, okay? They will find a way to get that antibiotic. So while it's something that we can all rally behind and actually find a meeting point with our comrades, you know, on the orthopedic side, the bottom line is this controversy won't go away because it flared for so long. many of you listening to my voice right now remember these, I don't know, rules that came out of nowhere. Like, oh, if you've had joint replacement, it's 2 months of antibiotics. No, it's 6 months. No, it's 2 years. No, it's lifetime. Where did all these rules come from? Nobody seems to know. They were guidelines that quickly fell apart. So I guess the bottom line is, if you have a working relationship with the orthopedic docs in your area, the ones that refer patients back and forth to you, then certainly, come to a meeting of the minds. But otherwise, this is, at the end of the day, in my opinion, a losing battle. That ultimately, patients are going to get their antibiotic, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, and you mentioned the word guidelines. You know, and dentists have been positioned as the gatekeepers and the systemic link. And so when you talk about guidelines, what about the American Heart Association and their guidelines?
So now infective endocarditis opens up a whole other can of worms, if you will. Because the American Heart Association has still reinforced the concept that we should be providing prophylaxis to avoid infective endocarditis. So it's not the same as the joint replacement infection thing. This is something where the American Heart Association says we should be doing it. Okay. But they did change the guidelines, and this was May of this year. And this is not a slight on the American Heart Association, so I hope they don't take this the wrong way, but man, the word didn't really get out. I found out, and again, Mr. Pharmacology, right? I should be on top of these things. I read my email every day. Holy crap. I don't think I heard about it until a month later. So they did it in May. I think I heard about it in June. I started blogging about it because I wanted to make sure that everyone who follows my blog or listens to my podcast on my website knows that the guidelines did change. What changed exactly? Again, it goes back to what we talked about before. Which medications should we be prescribing? Now, to be fair here, even the American Heart Association says what? Prophylaxis is only indicated for patients at the highest risk of infective endocarditis. Okay, so we're worried still about drug resistance, right? And we're worried about that the benefits are outweighed by the risks. Okay, so it's only for the highest risk or the riskiest patients. Okay, for infective endocarditis, and then the drugs that they recommend being prescribed have changed because they've said what? They believe that the frequent and serious adverse effects associated with clindamycin compared to other options means we should be ruling out the use of clindamycin. So they say what? Now they say our first line should always be amoxicillin, okay? If the patient has an allergy to penicillin, well, then what should we be using? We could use cefalexin, but that's pretty risky because, again, there's a cross-sensitivity between the amoxicillins of the world and the cephalosporins of the world. So then what? Azithromycin or doxycycline. This is for oral administration, okay? This is a significant departure because we've used clindamycin forever. And there are many docs out there who insist that they like clindamycin, that for the treatment of dental infection, especially if it involves osseous infection, clindamycin does a good job. But we're not talking about treating infection here. We're talking about preventing infection, infective endocarditis. And so these are the new guidelines. One more time, as you just pointed out, Kirk, that word guideline is merely that. It's a guideline. So do we still have docs out there who are prescribing clindamycin for penicillin allergic patients to avoid infective endocarditis? Yes. Maybe they didn't read the guideline. Maybe they don't want to follow the guideline. But in any event, we now have clear guidelines for the use of antibiotics, and they don't include clindamycin necessarily anymore for patients that are penicillin allergic.
Man, oh man. And then so much to think about, but I'm already confused just based on most of that. I mean, if I'm a young dentist, what can I anticipate? What's the future look like in this conversation? I mean, this is why it's so important to have a great resource like you, but what can we see the future in this department as far as young dentists or even mature dentists goes?
Yeah, I will say that I've had great experience with my dental students. You know, they come to my class, I teach them pharmacology, but they come armed with some facts they already learned from some seasoned veterans who are, you know, with them in the clinic, who really give them the benefit of their experience. And there's a lot of experience to go around with antibiotics in dentistry. And so they come prepared when they come to my class because they know that antibiotic stewardship is huge and that the future looks grim if we don't keep control over the antibiotics we use in dentistry because of the relatively small arsenal. let's not forget that there's other issues with antibiotics as well. For example, the supposed connection between prescribing an oral antibacterial for a patient who takes an oral contraceptive, okay? The risk of pregnancy is there or is not there? Well, we really don't know. So my students ask me, so tell me, Viola, once and for all, do antibiotics that we use in dentistry make oral contraceptives less effective? My answer is yes, as in yes and no, as in we don't really freaking know, because maybe because it's hard to get subjects to volunteer for the study. You know, take these two pills together. Let's see if you get pregnant. I don't know. It just seems like it's a very difficult conversation because we don't have enough data to really make that decision. Do we have enough anecdotal evidence to suggest it exists? Yes. Do we therefore err on the side of caution and tell our patients to use alternate forms of contraception? Yes. But see, that's where you draw the line. That's treating dental infection. This is prophylaxis, which kind of maybe almost falls outside our realm a little bit, but we're still somewhat responsible because it's our bugs that end up doing other things. So it's almost like now a new dentist would have to keep both sets in mind, you know, the set of guidelines that say, here's how you treat dental infection and an oral infection, and here's how you prophylax for other types of infection. And sometimes the two don't necessarily match up so well.
Amazing, Tom. So any last thoughts you have on this? This is a big topic, big controversy, but what else would you say as we get ready to wrap this up?
I will tell you, I've never had more requests for courses on this topic. As a matter of fact, Kirk, you and I are both going to be at the American Dental Association SmileCon in October. And I'm going to be at my own little corner there, as a matter of fact, all about pharmacology. And I will tell you already, I'm getting people emailing me saying, please, please talk about prophylaxis. Please tell us what we need to know about prophylaxis and what the latest guidelines are. So I can say this. If you want to come visit me at ADA, if you're going to ADA, come find me, okay? If you want to reach out to me via email or if you want to take one of my online courses, you know, sign up. I'm going to make sure I give you the very latest, very best information that's available. But I can understand right now why anyone who's listening to the sound of our voices is still scratching their head saying, man, this is confusing. I mean, what should I do on a daily basis? Here it is, Viola saying these are guidelines, but I've got the orthopedic doc screaming at me saying, no, we're going to do it this way. And I'm in the middle, and I'm hoping that's not where a lot of you feel you are. But remember, if you do feel that way, just reach out a hand. I'll be happy to help you. I'll give you the necessary information and maybe even some artillery you can use in the argument against the orthopedic docs if necessary. I don't want to foster any kind of ill will here, but maybe some ammunition or artillery you need to wage that war and say, no, here's what the facts say, and here's what we need to talk about as far as being stewards of antibiotic prescribing and making sure that we're not fostering resistance out there.
Yeah, awesome, buddy. And this is why, as you guys can already see or hear if you're listening to this, that's why Viola's just become an incredible, you know, part of our community, because you're going to be a trusted resource for us for a long time. Now, I know people that are listening, they're like, who is this guy? Like, how do I find out more information? Tell them about how to find out more about what you do. You also have great resources, a great library of stuff. You've got a awesome Instagram. So how do I find out more about what you do and how can I get you to come speak to my study club if I have a study club?
Absolutely. I would love to. So if you've got a study club out there right now and you'd like to have an update on pharmacology, please reach out. I would love to speak to your group. I've got 20 different courses that I offer to dental professionals. So you and I can literally do a course a month and never duplicate in the same year, okay? That's how many courses I have. And rightfully so, because my subjects stretch from everything in dentistry to outside dentistry. So we could talk all about, you know, medically complex patients and medical histories, and then we could talk about cardiovascular disease, diabetes. But I also am an expert on street drugs and illegal substances. I work with local law enforcement and nationally, all right, on substances and what people use to get high. One of my most requested courses are on cannabis, marijuana, because in the now 36 states, cannabis has been legalized in some form. What are the effects of cannabis on dentistry? Did you even learn about cannabis in dental school or hygiene school? Probably not. So do you know enough about cannabis to have that conversation with your patient? I would say maybe not. Let me be the one to give you that information. So how can you find out more about me? Kirk, I don't have a creative bone in my body, as you know, so I named my website after me. TomViola.com. Can't get any easier than that. And if you want to find me anywhere on my website, just go poking around, Google me. I'm up first usually when it comes into a dental pharmacology search. And just peruse my website. You've got CE courses you can take online. You've got my blog. You've got my podcast. And then outside of my website, you've got my social media, where I'm on Facebook, Instagram, you know, all of the social media sites. Just find me by typing in Pharmacology Declassified. Why? Because I wanted you to type as many letters as humanly possible. No, because that's the name of my company, Pharmacology Declassified, to declassify pharmacology to make it accessible and useful for everybody in the dental professions.
Awesome, brother. I really appreciate you being on. Make sure you check out Tom's stuff. He is awesome. And then if you're going to be out of SmileCon, you got to come by and say hi to both of us, because we'll be having a blast. So please join us out there. And meetings are back up in swing. So make sure you go and get out and see people again. So, Tom, I am always grateful to have you on the show. If you're listening also to, we put all the notes in the show notes. So you're going to see all the links to what Tom shared, and you can go back and check it out. So I'm going to have Viola back again and again and again. So if you're listening, you're like, hey, man, I want to hear about this. Like I said, this guy could talk forever. And like he said, he could talk forever. We'll have him back and examine new topics in pharmacology. So let us know what you want to hear from them. But we appreciate you guys listening today. And if you enjoyed today like I did, do me a favor. Do us a favor. Hit the share button. Share it with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you guys want to see. Until we see you next time. Keep watching or listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, everyone.
There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.